It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're going to switch gears here. A new term emerged from the pandemic, she session. The term is used to describe how the current recession is having a disproportionate effect on women's employment during the pandemic. Is the economic fallout derailing steady gains that women have made in our workforce over the past 70 years? Is there a silver lining here? Is this the prime opening for employers to, you know what, provide better support, not only for working women, but all employees? Share your experience at work in the pandemic, especially women this hour. We're at 800-642-1234. We are working to get C. Nicole Mason here on the line. Nicole is president and CEO of the Institute for Women's Policy Research. That's a Washington, D.C. think tank focused on pay equity, economic policies, and research impacting women. Nicole, are you there? Welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks. Yes, I am here. Thanks for having me.
So I want to ask you about your situation first. When you saw this pandemic and in the early months, a huge spike in unemployment for women, what went through your mind?
So I just want to start out by saying that I'm a single mother to 11-year-old twins now. So the pandemic and when schools closed and businesses closed, it directly impacted me and my family. And so the first couple of weeks, I thought we could get through it. But when reality set in and we realized that this was not going to be, sort of a short time out, women, it was becoming a catastrophe and women were losing an inordinate amount of jobs and we had no plan for schools to reopen. I believe like many families across the country and women across the country began to panic about, what happened to my family. But for women who lost their jobs, like might they be able to return to work?
What did you do?
Well, at beginning in March, I just winged it. Kids were learning virtually and I was, I had at that point really good relationships with my children's teachers. So when we were running late, I would say, just give us to the weekend and work over the weekends to catch up and then turn all the assignments in, at one time. But by the end of the quarter or the end of the year, we had several outstanding assignments missing and the teachers were very understanding. And I just kept saying, if I can get to the summer, they could do whatever they want to do. they were going to be free wild kids in the summer. By fall, everything would, clear up, schools would open. But that didn't happen. And so when in September, 865,000 women left the workforce. And people ask me all the time, like, why do you think that is? And I said, well, it's not pretty much a no-brainer. Schools didn't open. Daycares didn't open. And so women had to make these really tough choices.
Really tough choices. I'm wondering, what have we seen since then? What do the labor force numbers tell you come October, come November? Has there been any bounce back?
There hasn't. So there have been, when stay-at-home orders were lifted, some jobs were some people were able to go back to work. But for many women who had caretaking responsibilities and schools were still open, closed and daycares were still closed, they were not able to return to work. And we lost so many jobs, more than 2 million over a very short period of time in industries like the service sector, leisure and hospitality. And, what we know is those jobs aren't coming back, many of them. And if they do come back, they won't come back in the same number. So what we have now, is a crisis of care. Women, have these, caretaking responsibilities in their homes. But then we also have, women who are unemployed, women of color, low-wage workers who are unable to find jobs. So the unemployment for many of these workers has been, 26 weeks or more. So we're really at a crisis tipping point.
Have some women just stop looking for jobs?
Absolutely. Some women have stopped looking for jobs because there are no jobs to be found. And so had. And many women have not looked for jobs because of the unpredictability of care in this moment. So if, for example, even myself included, I don't know when schools are going to be open, you know, reopen. So it could be January, it could be next year. So in order to reenter the workforce, it requires some sort of predictability in terms of scheduling. And, you know, if I can't say for certain that I'm going to be able to show up to a job that requires me to be physically there, I can't apply for a job. I can't accept a job. It's sort of a wait and see. And we don't have a plan for, you know, reopening schools and reopening childcare centers. I'm optimistic that the vaccine will allow us to try to figure this out or get to some place of normalcy, but we're still a ways off.
If you're just joining us, we have C. Nicole Mason, who's president and CEO of the Institute for Women's Policy Research, as we look at how women are affected in this recession. You can join in at 800-642-1234. You know, this term that you coined, the she session, a twist on the word recession. You know, when you thought about that, did you think it would take off like that, that we would be using that term to describe what is going on in our country?
You know, I really didn't. I had been saying it was a she session for some time. And then when I was interviewed for the New York Times, I said, well, let's just call it that, you know, because that's what it is. And it just took off. But I think it's a really accurate description of the disproportionate impact of the COVID fuel recession on women. And it's just, it describes it perfectly. In 2008, the recession was impacted men, production and manufacturing. And because of the overrepresentation of women in the service sector, women are being hit hardest. So even when we think about strategies, it's also a way to help us think about, like, what are the solutions out of this? And it is job creation, but it's also making sure we have a strong care infrastructure and a strong social safety net so that for women who are not able to return to work, they have income supports and are able to take care of their families.
Women of color being hit disproportionately as well in this pandemic, what do you see there?
Because women of color, Black and Latina women, are overrepresented in the service sector, between 26% and 28%, they've been hit hardest because we lost those jobs fast. And those jobs are jobs that pay lower wages, have the least flexibility and benefits. And they're also the jobs that you have to show up in order to get paid. You can't work from home. You can't serve tables from home, by the way. So those women... you know, have had to choose between taking care of their families and earning a living. And for many women, the choice was they had to take care of their families.
Let's pause there with C. Nicole Mason, who leads the Institute for Women's Policy Research, as we discuss what happens when women leave the workforce by force and a layoff, by circumstances, pressures to care for a family in the pandemic. Have you juggled the demands of work, virtual schooling, keeping your family healthy? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the compromises women have made to their careers in the pandemic. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. There were more than 2 million fewer women in the workforce this November than there were in November 2019. That's the Bureau of Labor Statistics data. What caused you upheaval? Was it a lack of childcare, inability to do your work from home, to keep your child on task with virtual school? It's 800-642-1234. C. Nicole Mason is president of the Institute for Women's Policy Research, and she's with us for the hour. Let's take a call now. Cole is joining us from Sun Prairie. Hi, Cole.
Hi. I just wanted to say I had a thought when your guest talked about how a lot of these jobs aren't coming back. I wonder if, you know, it would be helpful to encourage a lot of the women that lost their jobs and aren't going to be able to get them back to run for representative positions in our state to do something in the longer term about, you know, the lack of action that we saw. If they're not going to be able to get their jobs back, I think it's worth having those people represent everybody, you know, try to represent people that lost their jobs, because clearly they were disproportionately affected. And your piece yesterday from the restaurant point of view is that they weren't represented. Nobody was doing anything for them. So I think, you know, maybe it, even, you know, seeing that as a job opportunity to help women in the longer term, getting more women in government is a really good thing. So,
Cole, yeah, Cole, thanks. I want Nicole here to weigh in that and encouraging more women to run for office. But by the way, that also requires money.
It does also require money. And, I think we're in the moment where it's becoming increasingly clear that we do need some change at the top levels, because many of the concerns, like, for example, this partisan bickering at while families are struggling, it's just really distasteful. And, if we had more women in, you know, seats, both at the state and federal level, then maybe we would see some of the changes we've been talking about for so long. But in the short term, I think in terms of getting women back to work and making sure they can reenter the workforce, we need childcare. We need strong care infrastructure. We need also income support so that families who are not able to return to work for whatever reason are able to take care of their families. Businesses also have a role to play here in making sure that their employees have support so that they can take care of their families and also, sustain employment.
On that child care piece, that's really tricky because, you know, there are child care deserts. There are a fraction a number of child care centers that are open and operating here in Wisconsin than there were a decade ago. That in itself is a crisis, Nicole.
It is a real crisis. And, you know, the truth of the matter is that our child care infrastructure, our care infrastructure hasn't been working for working women or the workers for quite some time now. And the pandemic really brought that into focus. So in the U.S., we tend to treat child care as a private obligation of families rather than a public good. So families can spend up to 30% of their income on care. And that's just not right because, you know, if we were able to invest in a really sound care infrastructure, more women would stay in the workforce. There'd be more flexibility. And actually, it could contribute up to $1.6 trillion to the GDP. So there's a case, an economic case to be made for child care supports that would, again, address some of these issues related to child care deserts, address issues of quality as well as pay for workers.
Let's bring in another call now. David is with us from Ironwood, Michigan this morning. Hi, David. What is on your mind?
Well, the fact that guys still get paid more than women. So when the family has to decide who's going to stay home, it's usually the woman. And if they do work from home, well, then you're working from home and taking care of kids. And I have to agree with this point. This government doesn't do what's needed to support. I mean, civilization is because we all could get together and work together. Without it, we all be like living like Gilligan's Island. So, you know.
David is saying that women earn 81 cents to every dollar a man makes. Nicole.
Yeah. And, you know, I really love these two calls that we have because, you know, everyone gets it. Men, women, you know, we all get it. And it's cutting across, occupations and sectors and class. We all understand that we're in crisis and, states and in the government, they're not doing enough. We're in a moment where we have an opportunity to think bigger, to support families in different ways and really build an economy, a more equitable economy that benefits the many rather than just the few.
Yeah, we're talking with C. Nicole Mason, who's president and chief executive of the Institute for Women's Policy Research, looking at the impact that women have had to their careers, to their lives during the economic fallout of the pandemic. Your insights as well at 800-642-1234. Nicole, your institute laid out a report called Building the Future. What are the key points that need to happen in order to change the future for women in their careers and women in our society?
So a lot of things need to happen, but in the report we talk about Again, building a national child care infrastructure and treating child care as not a not just a private obligation of families, but a public good. And, you know, we do have free K to 12 education, public education, and anybody, regardless of income, can tap into that system. And so the United States is singular among developed countries that don't have a national care infrastructure that everyone supports and pays into. So I think it's time. I think it's time that we create one. Also, when we think about wages, one of the things that's made the pandemic really excruciating for working families, families earning less than $40,000 a year, is that wages haven't kept pace with inflation. And so many families haven't, most impacted families haven't, you know, had few savings, and you need those savings in times like this. So raising wages, living wages for families is really, really critically important. Paid sick leave and family leave. Again, we're in the middle of a health crisis, and many families or many people don't have health care or worried about going to seek help because of the bill at the end of the day. And so, you know, that just doesn't seem humane, and that doesn't seem as though we're leading with our values.
One of the things on your list is to expand unemployment insurance eligibility. Here in Wisconsin, we're facing an unemployment insurance crisis backlog, thousands of people not receiving their benefits yet. What does that do to a family?
Well, again, it's unconscionable what's happening right now. Families are really screaming out. I mean, we've all seen the long food lines. Families are, having trouble with housing and covering rent and just basic necessities. And that shouldn't be the case in one of the richest countries in the world. When I think about unemployment insurance, again, it's a bit sickening to see people at the top levels arguing around whether or not people should receive $300 or $600 added benefits or economic impact payment that will really help get them through the holidays and be able to take care of their families. We just have to question priorities here. There is a need, across the country, here in D.C., again, there's backlogs across the country, in terms of applying for unemployment insurance and receiving the benefits in a timely manner so that you can, make ends meet. That's just not happening. And it's a real disgrace.
When you look at the minimum wage, where do you want to see it? What should be the discussion around the minimum wage?
Well, absolutely. At the bare minimum, we need a $15 minimum wage. And I say that's the bare minimum because even $15 an hour is not enough to take care of a family and provide housing. You still need other social supports, which, anybody, in my opinion, who works 40 hours a week should be able to take care of their families with ease. And that's just not the case here. Minimum wage, $15 an hour, benefits, health care. Again, everyone should have, health care. I think we also need reform in terms of, people who are, not attached to a traditional employer. So gig workers, having a system where they can, receive unemployment insurance and health care and benefits, is also really important. Our economy is changing, and we still use an economic model that's sort of stuck in the 50s or 60s, where we assume that people will stay with an employer for, years or decades. And that's just not our reality right now.
I wonder if freelance has been a bright spot for women in the pandemic.
Well, so women, because of the pay gap, are the majority of part-time workers. But you have to know that when jobs disappeared, part-time employment also disappeared as well, because part-time employment, especially for women, is also tied to full-time employment. So many of those jobs have all but disappeared as well.
Yeah. See Nicole Mason, CEO of the Institute for Women's Policy Research. She's explaining changes in labor force participation and how women are affected in the pandemic. What is your story? Let's talk at 800-642-1234. We'll continue our conversation about women in the workplace right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. you're with us for the morning show as we explore what we can learn from the She Session, the term describing the disproportionate effect this recession is having on women's employment. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. I'm a mom. I'm a mom of four young kids in virtual school in Madison. As you can hear, I've not stepped back from my job. And I'll say, if anything, I've leaned into work as a journalist in the pandemic. But it's only possible. It is only possible because I have major support systems. A spouse who picks up more than 50% of family duties. My mother-in-law and father-in-law uprooted in August, moved into our neighborhood, becoming part of our bubble, helping our kids with virtual school every day, arriving at 7:15 a.m. sharp. Without them, there's no way. Something would have to give. Your story, 800-642-1234. See, Nicole Mason is CEO of the Institute for Women's Policy Research, and she's our guide for the hour. And Nicole, I think that you would need to have some major support systems in order to make this work right now, to be able to be at work.
Yeah, so I have 11-year-old twins, and, you know, they are pretty self-sufficient. I mean, they can feed themselves. But virtual learning is another animal, and they've transitioned to middle school, so they're in sixth grade now. And so we were really struggling. I thought I could do it. I'm a single mom. I thought I could do it by myself and just sort of monitor them in the other room, and that just wasn't working. So I found college graduate out of school and unemployed, and they come in every day at around 10 o'clock, and they stay until the end of the school day to support their learning and also to give me peace of mind, because I'm often, as you said, my work is much more urgent in this moment. So, I'm in meetings and at work for at least, 8 or 9 hours a day. And so without support systems, and I feel very fortunate. Many women are not able to, sustain both.
Let's bring in another call now. Kathy is joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes. I had a question. I have a question and a comment. The question is, and maybe I misunderstood this regarding, I don't know if the term was national health, child care. I was kind of curious what that would look like. Would that provide for second and third shift workers? And also, as your speaker said, she has a great support system, which is good. And I feel like we need to subsidize or support the family more to make this work. Money isn't the answer all the time. I mean, money maybe to educate and start these programs, but without that support, it really, I don't see that childcare is the only answer, unless it's quality and I guess improved.
Yeah, Kathy, thank you for that. Nicole.
Yeah, so thanks, Kathy. So I do think that we also, when we think about childcare, needs to be expansive and include second and third shift workers, women who are employed in non-traditional employment hours, not 9 to 5. And the way I see it is that we do need a robust care infrastructure in the U.S. Again, we're alone and singular among developed countries that do not have a robust care infrastructure, beginning from zero. 0 to 13. And, we don't believe, or at IWPR, we say that no family should have to spend more than 7% of their income on care. And also recognizing that there are additional supports that families need. So it's not just about money and care, but you know what? Having care available and accessible and making sure that it's high quality is also really critically important for working families.
Do you see a system of care that is a federal type system that is at that level straight across the country? How does that work?
So we would like for it to be a federal program. Most of the other developed countries like Sweden and Norway, it is a federal system. But, we're very clear-eyed about the gridlock that happens at the federal level. So we are thinking about state-led initiatives like ballot referendums where we might be able to take it directly to people and families. We believe that if we put it to the people, especially in this moment, that we have a real good shot at getting care. and getting supports for families. You know, that's going to be really critically important. And I just want to be very clear that women will not be able to re-enter the workforce in pre-pandemic levels until we're able to deal with the care crisis. That's schools opening, daycares opening, and a number that is, you know, able to meet the capacity. You know, so we really, you know, this is not 2008. They're women returning to the workforce and having the supports they need. Care is chief among them.
Let's bring in Mia now, joining us from Wauwatosa. Mia, what are your thoughts?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. So it seems like a lot of the solutions that Nicole is proposing are separating families, encouraging women to go back to work out of the home, you know, assuming men are working out of the home, and then also taking children out of the home to go into daycare facilities. And I'm just wondering if there are any solutions she's looked at that encourage families to stay more in the home. My husband is a second year resident at the Medical College of Wisconsin, and he's been working insane hours with the coronavirus. And as a woman who is at home with my kids, I've just felt extremely unsupported during this time. And he ended up contracting COVID. We had to separate from him, and there was just not a lot of support for me.
Wow. Mia, thank you for sharing that. Nicole, you know, that too is a different layer here, mm-hmm. the support systems for women who are at home.
Mm. Well, you know, the thing about it is that before the pandemic, women were spending 32% more time on caretaking responsibilities than, you know, men. And that obviously has increased exponentially because of the pandemic. And I do think that when we talk about care and supports, I'm thinking about a more expansive model that is able to meet the needs of families. So it's not a one size fits all system or a recommendation. I think that there will be some families who are not able to return to work, or women who are not able to return to work right now, but making sure they have both the emotional, economic, and social supports they need to be able to, you know, do what they have to take care of their families is really important.
What about cases where the woman is the major earner in the house? What do we do about in those circumstances where maybe they are that frontline worker, that frontline healthcare worker, and they are still trying to keep their family and households operating at home as well?
So that is the story of this moment. So our breadwinner moms, and those are moms who are, you know, 40% of their earnings go to the household, or more of their earnings go to the household. And many of them are single mothers, especially, you know, women of color, Black women. 4 out of 5 Black women are primary breadwinners in their families. And many of them don't have the option, like myself, do not have the option to stop working because we are, you know, the sole providers or, you know, breadwinners in our families. So those families are struggling. I've met women who work on the front lines and are spoken with our grocery store clerks who have had to make the tough decision to stop working. And many of them, some of them have been able to tap into unemployment or apply for unemployment insurance. But as you said earlier, the caseload is so high. So many of those families are without income supports right now. So how they're making ends meet is relying on family support networks. But again, this creates an enormous amount of strain on families, extended family members as well.
We're talking with C. Nicole Mason, President and Chief Executive of the Institute for Women's Policy Research. Let's bring in Jill now in Rhinelander. Hi, Jill. What do you see going on?
Well, I'm an old lady. Back in the early 60s when I was in college and Women's Lib was getting started, there was a big hue and cry. Every employer was going to provide daycare for their female employees, you know, ages 0 on up, and it never happened. I don't see it happening now either, with daycare being provided so women can work.
So Jill doesn't see that anything is going to change, but she recalls in the 60s where this too was a really huge issue.
Thanks, Jill. I love, first of all, I love that you said women's lib. You know, I really feel connected to women, you know, that term. So I want to say that there was a time where we did have a more national child care infrastructure during World War II when men were away at war and we needed women in the factories. Employers put daycare centers, child care centers in their office buildings and factories so that women could go to work. And then in the 60s, there was a promise of child care, and it was nixed by President Nixon. And so what I'm hoping for in this moment that's a bit different is that this issue of care, because of the pandemic, has cuts across women in corporate, women on the front lines, lower wage workers. This is an issue of that has become more urgent in this moment. So what I'm hoping is that there is the public will for us to say, how might we be able to do this differently? And, you know, by the way, Jill, and you know this because this is a result of Women's Lib, you know, more than 50% of the workforce is women, but we haven't really made moves to make sure that they have all the support they need in the workplace. And so we're in this moment where, I mean, people like us and other organizations and ordinary citizens are saying, you know, women are saying, you know, enough is enough.
We're talking with C. Nicole Mason, who leads the think tank Institute for Women's Policy Research. Women, are you the main breadwinner in your household? What is that added stress like during the pandemic? Are you an essential frontline worker? How are you doing it? How are you juggling your work and family? How many hours a week do you work right now? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with C. Nicole Mason right here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Thanks for being here. Let's get back to our conversation with C. Nicole Mason of the Institute for Women's Policy Research. It's headquartered in Washington. Women earn, as you've heard, 81 cents to every dollar that men make. And so in a dual career household, what will be the economic decision on whose career takes a back seat? We're looking at the implications of the recession, how it affects women, families, the larger labor force. Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in John now in Brown Deer. Hi, John.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for fielding my call. I'd just like to make a brief comment. And the reason why American working class families, and in particular women, are being economically crushed, while the Jeff Bezoses and Mark Zuckerbergs of the world continue to thrive and accumulate billions and billions of dollars in wealth, can largely be determined by dissecting and analyzing the political economy of American capitalism. And that's my brief comment, and I'd like to hear your guest's response to it.
John, so John is saying there that this is really driven by capitalism in order to make more money, Nicole.
Well, you know, Jeff, I agree with you. So, and the income disparity is very distorted, especially in this moment where billionaires like Jeff Bezos have in this moment doubled their wealth, where families, you know, working class families are struggling. And providing economic impact payments or stimulus to families is seen as a handout. But as we saw with the PPP loan process, much of the money went to large corporations and businesses, and many smaller businesses, mom and pop or individual owners, were left out. So it's a broken system, and it needs to be fixed. And so when I think about this, I think, you know, how might we build an economy that is fairer, more just, equitable, and we can make sure that workers have benefits, are able to take care of their families, and earn a decent living. That's no longer the case.
One segment of the population we haven't touched on, Nicole, is younger women, younger workers in these challenging times. What are they facing?
So the unemployment rate for younger workers is topping, 20%. For younger workers of color, it's even higher. So in this moment, when you think about recent college graduates, youth who are disconnected, who are neither in school or, employed, those workers are having a really difficult time in this moment because when we think about first hired, first fired. Uh-huh. We see that a lot. And again, even in seeking help to, support my family, we turned to unemployed college graduates because, there's a big, huge segment of population where, people are unemployed. Younger workers are unemployed. And for younger women, that will have a definite impact on their long-term career earnings, their career mobility, especially if it continues to drag out.
What do you say to critics who cite little evidence of a she-cession, that since the start of the recession, the labor force participation rate for adult men has gone down 2 percentage points, for adult women it's gone down 2.1 percentage points, and that there's really not much difference there?
So the fact of the matter is, at the beginning of the recession, women lost 4 out of 5 jobs. In April, March and April, the unemployment rate for women was 17 to 19%. So there you go. And the truth of the matter is that we don't need to be in denial about the facts on the ground and who's being most impacted in this moment. It's women, it's lower wage workers, it's workers who have fewer benefits. The most vulnerable workers, the people who are not struggling and probably the people who are writing articles like this, are those who have not been most impacted, those earning more than $40,000 a year and who are able to work remotely. But on the ground and the stories that I hear, this is a crisis. It's a crisis that's disproportionately impacting women and lower wage workers.
Let's look at rural communities for a moment, communities where there are fewer jobs to be had, that are less connected to metropolitan areas, less transportation. What do you see happening to women in these rural communities?
So thanks for asking about rural communities, because I've spent a lot of my, before I came to IWPR, doing work on women in the rural South. And before the pandemic, the unemployment rates were so high, and people were no longer looking for work because many of the jobs had disappeared, factories closed, and there's also, mass exodus from some, for those who can, leaving rural communities. And, compounded by transportation and infrastructure issues, broadband issues, and also the issue of care deserts. So many of the issues that metropolitan areas have faced during the pandemic are magnified in rural communities because of things like the lack of infrastructure and the disappearance of whole industries over decades. So for many of those women, they will have an additional burden in terms of trying to reenter the workforce and sustain employment.
What do you say to people who say, okay, use this time to retool, to change careers, to get an education, to go back into the labor force in a whole different sector?
So that's what some women are going to have to do, because some of these jobs are not coming back. They've disappeared for good. Education and training will be really important in this moment, but we have to be very clear-eyed about this. For families to go back to school or return to get a post-secondary education or credentialing, they're going to still need economic supports. They're still going to need childcare. So we have to make sure that, one, they have the money to be able to pursue educational and training opportunities. Two, they have economic supports. And three, they have care. And we have to do all those things simultaneously. So when we think about the robust recovery package that I'm just sure is coming down the pike with the new administration, that we make provisions for this so that we get money to the states so that women can retool, reskill, upskill, so that they can be able to take care of their families.
Let's bring in Shauna now in Milwaukee. Hi, Shauna. What are your thoughts?
Hi. I just wanted to say that when you say the problem is capitalism, the first alternative that jumps to mind is socialism or communism. But the government does not own the means of production in this country. So you can't have socialism or communism unless you count the military and the VA. Those are the only things that are owned by the government in this country. So socialism or communism is not an alternative, but regulation of large corporations is a doable alternative. And we need to be clear on that instead of saying, oh, capitalism is the problem. And the first thing that people think of is, oh, then you've got to have socialism or communism, and that's a terrible thing. No, we got to have regulation of large corporations. Otherwise, we're not going to get out of this.
Shauna, thank you. And Nicole, Shauna's saying more regulation of large corporations.
Yeah, you know, unchecked capitalism is a problem. Lack of regulation and monopolies are a problem in the U.S. And also not providing for the most vulnerable and leading with their values is also a problem. So we just need to be really clear about that. I mean, the first thing, saying that we need a child care infrastructure in the U.S. is not about socialism. It's the right thing to do. And there's an economic case to be made that it allows women to participate in higher numbers in the labor force that contributes to productivity. So these things are all very connected. Nobody here, at least, or I'm not saying, you know, my mind does not, when I say, capitalism is broken, the next thing is not socialism or communism. It's building a more just and equitable society where people, again, workers, no one should have to work 40 hours a week and not be able to take care of their families and then be blamed for not being able to do that.
Nicole, thank you for joining us. See, Nicole Mason is president and chief executive of the Institute for Women's Policy Research. That is a think tank focused on pay equity, economic policies, and research impacting women based in Washington, D.C. Just ahead, it is 1 a.m. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.